南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for being here. Any new people, so much a pleasure to have you here. Please consider subscribing and joining our Sangha. Yeah, it's me. I just got rid of all the hair. It's very hot and humid here in Mississippi, and it's just becoming more of a discomfort, so I just got rid of it. I'll probably let it grow again. I'm not a fashion-based creature as a person and as a Buddhist, right? Really not interested in following fashion of any sort. Nichiren, as you know by now, is living in Shogunate Japan, surrounded by samurai, and the opinions of the ruler of the country are pretty much a life or death mandate for most of the citizenry of Japan, right? I mean, samurais rule by, I just made an analogy in my head that's kind of frightening. You may disagree with me, but you know me. I'll tell you what's on my mind. And for those of you out of the country, you get enough information about this. This shouldn't be surprising. The world is full of a tremendously out of control, what should I call it, a modality? The prevalence of violence throughout the world is absolutely insane. I don't think we've seen this much violence amongst human beings without a world war ever. There's so much. People just don't have the tools. And by that I mean they're not thinking right. People don't have the tools to have discussion, dialogue. This is our great human invention of language and comparing notes and ideas and learning things from one another. What a spectacular thing we can do. It's something we try to do here on this channel, yeah? The whole purpose for this channel is that we communicate correctly the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha and his teachings of self-manifesting Buddha of the Lotus Sutra. With the help of our great mentor and bodhisattva of our era, Nichiren. That's what we're doing. And it's inspiring. Buddhism is exciting, as I was saying yesterday. And we're learning the skills of communication by virtue of all this information we're getting through Nichiren and Shakyamuni and other scholars, Tendai, Dengyo, Miaolo, yeah? And so with these tools of understanding, we have something to share, something to analyze, something to communicate. And as much as Nichiren spends time in Shogunate Japan, having to demonstrate that these other people that are in power, those who've ingratiated themselves with the shogunate, the life or death class, the elites, just because they're there doesn't mean they're right. but they will enforce their right by might, with a sword. Well, today, we have police and military and violence so well funded beyond any stretch of human life affirming action. What is funded, what is supported, what is promoted is totally life unaffirming. Control through threat, fear, violence. And the populace has learned the lesson. And the government has no problem putting weapons into their hands. Solve your problems with bullets. Don't talk. You don't know how to do that. Right? Because we've decimated education so much that you can barely read or write. So you have to be brutal to solve your differences. It's disgusting. And I'm not just talking about the United States. Please understand, I'm talking about the situation in the globe, in humanity. This is where we are, right? Shakyamuni predicted this. Greed, anger, stupidity. Those are the three main drivers of our era. And we see it in Shogunate Japan. So when we read these opinions and these arguments from Nichiren about trying to change the hearts and minds of the people of Japan, it's not so far away from our very own situation. It clicks with our own situation, yeah? So if you're new to this channel and you've come to your curiosity about Buddhism, thinking about Buddhists, as many do, as pacifistic, quiet little people who are always soft-spoken, and I sit and I meditate on my navel, you have a very incorrect impression of what Buddhism is, what Shakyamuni, Siddhartha Gautama, the man who would become enlightened and earn the moniker of Shakyamuni, the great sage from the Shakya clan, and Buddha, is from a kingdom in India that had its position due to its might. He was from a warrior clan, the founder of Buddhism. So we're not that far removed. We're just human beings trying to enlighten our mind above, beyond, however you want to see it, the animal behavior of our species, our samsaric existence. That even though we are samsaric beings, species, animal, however you want to define human, the one thing we have that is far more developed than anything else is our consciousnesses. And we have 9 consciousnesses. There are videos, you can use the search on this channel, put in 9 consciousnesses, and you'll get several videos that discuss this aspect of Buddhist teaching. And that 9th core, most inherent in all phenomena, not just humans, is the potential to be conscious, to be awakened, to perceive, to experience life as life. Not political, not influenced, not attached, not emotional, but to see it absolutely clear. The magnificent process that is the entire universe as the engine of this life process that manifests in innumerable ways. You can't fathom all the ways that life instantiates, from an electron to a molecule to flesh to grass and flowers and trees to planets to the sun to the everything in the universe. What makes it all happen? What allows for this manifestation? What does that energy in transformation constantly in flux. What is it to know that process, to see it in action, to see everything around us, including ourselves and this computer and this house, this so on and so forth, as constantly manifesting moment to moment? Because nothing just sits. There's nothing static in the universe. Everything is constantly in flux. But as samsaric, attached animals, we see things as permanent, as static. But that we know better than that. We really do. You don't have to be that tremendously scientific to understand that things exist for a while and they fall apart. Things are not permanent, including ourselves, right? We age and we die. But there's this precious, short, really, time period where we become aware. We can see what is happening, right? It's called being. It's a verb. We don't just be. If we did, then there would never be change. So Buddhism takes that lens of understanding and drills down into it. And the whole premise of Buddhism is that once you understand that everything is in flux, in change, you can start to release your anxieties about owning it, hanging on to it, right? Because if something's constantly changing, what are you hanging on to? It's kind of slipping through your fingers, isn't it? And if you get that, then you start to understand what this talk from Nagarjuna and Vasubandhu and Shakyamuni, what this talk about emptiness is. It's the idea that we think we're grabbing something statically as it is and making it permanent and that we now own it. But the truth of it is, if you really understand the process of life, is that we're really grabbing onto nothing. We're making it important. And because we make it important, we stress about it. And that stress leads to this umbrella term, suffering. It's anxieties, it's stress. And so if you understand that what you're grabbing at, it's the silliness of samsaric life, it's still there. You can enjoy it. You can use the teapot. You can make a grilled cheese on your griddle. I mean, yes, there's no denial of that reality. It's just a more profound understanding that ultimately hanging on to those things isn't life-affirming. It's something we do because we're all moving through time space. Everything is in flow. So we can enjoy it without stressing that, oh, it broke. Don't get mad. It's just another thing that's going away. We can get another manifestation of it. Yeah, right? It's very detoxing of that stress and fear. We're all trying to get to that Buddha consciousness that's completely released from all those foibles of possessing and fear. That's enlightenment. Now we can just participate in this great, magnificent, constant engine of life. How wonderful it is. The last thing we want to do is destroy it. It's so wonderful to be in it. So the last thing a Buddhist wants is destruction, something that's non-life affirming. If you get from that we're pacifists, yeah, I could see where that was a limited understanding, let's say. But it's also a part of Buddhism that when you're right, you're right. And I don't mean right in the sense of these are mine and I own them, so don't trespass. That's the illusion. When you understand Shakyamuni's teachings and what Buddha, the state of being of Buddha is, and that complete life engine affirmation of the processes of life. Which is very, it's very calming. But if somebody's going to tell you, oh no, no, you got to wear these kind of shoes or you can't chant. Hold on. We will stand our ground. Because the vitality, the importance of understanding what Shakyamuni taught and how anyone, no matter what your education, your socioeconomic status, anything, anyone can awaken this Buddha mind, because that mind is simply perceiving what's been here since the Big Bang. This is just the process of all phenomena. There's no diploma, no requirement other than your complete commitment to that mental state. That's a requirement. And Nichiren even gave us tools to make it even more accessible. Because in this era, this time, we live in a time of tremendous distraction. Right? Think about the distractions. Think about every little bleep and bloop that your cell phone makes. All of this information just barraging our minds constantly. We need something to focus on. We need something to take our conscious awareness, and this is what we call the monkey mind, because our minds work like a whole grove of trees filled with monkeys, all screaming at us, every one of them, for our attention. Look at me, look at me, look at me, right? Buy this, buy that. Join this, join that. They're monkeys just screaming at us all the time. Hard to get down to business and focus on our Buddha-ness, our clear mind. So Nichiren had this brilliant idea that's really throughout the Buddha's teachings, because Buddha's teachings are a song, they're chanting, right? It was all learned and spread by memorization, right? If you read any of the sutras, there are sections that are, they're really just song verses, because those are easy to remember accurately and memorize and repeat. That's chanting. All of Buddhist teachings were done this way for hundreds of years. And the fear of the losing of the accuracy and the clarity and the genuine words of Shakyamuni Buddha, that stress of losing those teachings over time, people starting who had literacy, who had command of different languages, would be hired by elites to transcribe those memorizations, making a cause to keep the teachings alive well beyond the demise of Shakyamuni. This is how you and I now end up with books of translations of all of these scholarship about Shakyamuni's teachings and the sutras. Of course, we're talking about thousands of years, so things change over time, people's opinions change, and always at some point, some great bodhisattva comes out and goes, you guys have strayed. You've started adding your own bullshit to this. That's not it. Let's get back to the words of Shakyamuni. Let's get back to the truth of what it is we're trying to do. No, clapping your hands and pointing your fingers isn't part of what Shakyamuni was teaching. They may have been early concepts to train the mind for its potential, but the most evolved, the ultimate teachings of Shakyamuni are self-practice. And that's done through Myoho Renge Kyo. So Nichiren takes that and goes, let me create a mandala, not a picture of a person or a place or a thing, because those are all the delusions. Let me create a mandala that's conceptual, that indicates Myoho Rengekyo, this Lotus Sutra, the personages which are stand-ins for mental states and understanding, and list them, the ones that are in the Lotus Sutra, this sermon. And the focus of it is this sutra. So down the center, I am present, I am dedicated and invoking this self-practice, mu, of Myoho Rengekyo. Namu Myoho Rengekyo. That's what we're doing. Self-realizing Buddha with our mind. So he made this mandala so it couldn't be confused with things or people. It's just about the law. The law, we call it a law because it's like a physical law. We take our human apparatus, our bodies, our environment, our everything that we know physically, and we bring it to bear on these characters in this mandala of Myo and Ho. And we, Namu, I am present, I am doing this, instantiating, invoking Myoho Rengekyo, the transformative reality of Buddha mind while remaining in this samsaric apparatus, this earthbound physical life, yeah? Namu Myoho Rengekyo. That's what this is all about. Is it pacifist? That's just a political term. We respect those who are working actively as we are to invoke our Buddha mind, our ultimate life-affirming mental state. And we resist and rebuff those that would detract us, distract us, try to mislead us. That's not acceptable. So we have a hard line. That's an ethic. That's a dignity. Yeah? So that's a Buddhist. It takes work. It takes determination. It takes a self-affirming position. So, that was a long preamble. We are now in the midst of this essay on gratitude, because if you really understand the depth of this practice for your own life, there's a tremendous sense of gratitude for Shakyamuni to have shown that how to do this, that we actually can do this. And out of respect for Shakyamuni and every bodhisattva, including Nichiren, for bringing this enlightenment practice to us, out of respect and dignity for this practice, if we value it at all, we need to demonstrate that we can do it well. And we need to make those around us understand the value, the validity, the efficacy, the wonder that is self-enlightenment. Not in an ego way, but in a very compassionate way. Dude, you've got to do this. It changes your life. Absolutely guaranteed. Do we need to hit people over the head with it? Maybe at times that's necessary, but that's not the way. Our charge is bodhisattva. So our charge is to be so well-versed and accomplished in our enlightenment that we affect everyone around us without even uttering a word, just our actions as human beings with Buddha mind will influence people. And they'll come out of the woodwork to find out what are you smoking? What are you doing that's changing your life so much? How do you get through these things? People will be curious, and they may not know how to ask. They won't know necessarily the right Buddhist question to ask. They're just stunned, and they want to know how you've done it. Some of them might be afraid. People who don't understand Buddhism are often taken aback and think, there's something magical going on. What's going on here? They don't know. So our compassion for them, understanding their ignorance, understanding why this might be shocking to them, is our compassion. Try it with me. Come chant. Try chanting. Let me show you my mandala. Right? And then slowly there's a willingness in those people around you to find out more. Oftentimes it's overwhelming how much they want to find out more. Right? So it's this mission that we have to share this information, to help others to come to this realization. That's our Bodhisattva mission. And through this channel, I'm trying to do that my own way. I'm geographically limited, you might say, because I'm in the middle of the Bible Belt in a countryside in Mississippi. I don't have a ton of people around me, let alone interested in Buddhism. Right? I'm in the seat of Baptist churches. And still, I have a lot of people that come to me from time to time. I invite them here and we discuss. But overwhelmingly, our Sangha is global, worldwide. UK, Australia, Taiwan, Canada, you name it. We're all over the place. And so now Nichiren is in the midst of demonstrating how these other teachers who have their positions within government, their station is part of the elite, how they're not truly Buddhist teachers, that they're misleading people. So he's standing up. He's being a Buddhist. He's saying, no, that's not true. That's misled. And let me show you why. It's not just my opinion. Let me read from Shakyamuni's own teachings, and it will become obvious and clear that these other sects, these other schools, these other teachers, for whatever reason, whether they're repeating mistakes that they've just been taught, or whether they've invented it themselves, it's wrong. Wrong doctrine in the Hoso school. Nichiren says, in time, Grandmaster Tendai passed away. Now, if you want to know more about what he was just talking about, see the previous video. Grandmaster Tendai passed away. The Qin and Sui dynasties were replaced by the Tang dynasty. Time goes on. And Grandmaster Chang'an also passed away, the great disciple of Tendai. And the teaching of Grandmaster Tendai began to decline. It wasn't as popular. People started getting other ideas. They didn't stick to correct practice or understanding. During the reign of the Taizong of the Tang Dynasty, Tripitaka Master Xuan Chang visited India from the 3rd year to the 19th year of the Chen Quan era, 629 to 645. After completely mastering Buddhism in India, he returned and conveyed the doctrine of the Hoso school to the Chinese people. Now, this happened several times in history. You know, the complete teaching evolves in your area, and then it becomes taught to successive generations. But with generations, with the loss of the master and time, people get lazy and other ideas start to spread around, and the fervor of being around the first teacher diminishes, right? That's the way we are. And then some great scholar who's studying goes back to some other country, in this case India, and he learns a bunch of stuff that they didn't know before. That doesn't mean it's superior. It just means it never bubbled up in the scholarship of previous generations. And India, you know, or this other place has also been going through time, and they've come up with new and ideal practices. That doesn't mean they're better. They're not from the original source. They just have spawned through time, right? People trying to figure it out. Now, you have this scholar, emissary, goes to India, learns all these new things, and goes, wow, this is new. This is exciting. Now I'll go back to China, and I'll be important. See, it's always the ego. I'll start teaching this because nobody's ever heard of it, and people will laud me as a great scholar. Who cares what it really means? I just have something new to bring, right? Buy all new, you know. How many times have we bought the all new toothpaste? It's just the same old toothpaste, rebranded, a new box, a new color scheme. It's just toothpaste. But how do I get people to buy into my toothpaste? I'll color it with green speckles. Woo! Right? But that doesn't make it any better. In fact, it has the potential to take you away from the better one. Because you spent so much time and money trying to develop this ulawi that you couldn't put the good ingredients in it anymore. But that's okay. It still looks and smells like toothpaste, and I'll get the money. This marketing, ego. After completely mastering those current teachings in India, he returns and conveyed the doctrine of the Hoso school to the Chinese people. The doctrine of Shren Chang's school was as incompatible as fire and water are with the Tendai school. So it's like something different. Bringing back such scriptures as the Revealing the Profound and the Secret Sutra, the Treatise on the Stages of Yoga Practice, and the Establishment of the Consciousness Only Doctrine. Well, these aren't Buddhism at all. Yoga? It's a practice, grant you, but it's not self-enlightenment. But it's new. It's exciting. Which Grandmaster Tendai had no chance to examine because it didn't exist when he was around. So if you're looking to your history of your school and they don't even talk about these other ones, well, that makes you suspicious. Maybe the new toothpaste is better. We're so easily misled. Huaisang began to say that though the Lotus Sutra was superior to all other sutras, it was inferior to the Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra. Why? Did he ever examine why? Just because it's new and you say so? What a bold statement. That's obvious politics, isn't it? Yeah, what you're doing is baloney. It's not, it's the best, but it's not this. Okay, it's the best, but it's not. Okay, that's a true statement. So yours is better? Grandmaster Tendai had never seen them, and probably because the scholars who descended from Tendai lacked the wisdom, everyone came to agree with Shren Chang. In other words, not Tendai's fault that this wasn't reputed, but certainly his students, his inheritors of the teachings, they should have stood firm. They should have said, yeah, you found out about, you know, body positions and stuff, and that's great for exercise, but it's not Buddhism. They should have stood up, but they didn't. They just passively let it go. That's the first error, right? Emperor Tang Tsung, a great ruler of Tang China, was a firm believer of Huaisang. He was convinced. Huaisang got his attention. He said, this is cooler. You can do it. Nobody therefore expressed opinions contrary to Sun Chang's out of fear of the emperor. Ah, there it is. Huasang made powerful friends, and his powerful friend ruled the nation. And if you didn't want to have your head cut off, you damn well better do what the ruler of the nation says. Doesn't matter what's right or wrong, you just follow. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right? This is human nature. Authoritarianism. Totalitarianism. People like to be told what to do. It's a sad reality. Telling yourself what to do, far more profound. But it takes courage, doesn't it? Certainly in the face of this kind of government. It is a pity that they turned away from Grandmaster Tendai's notion? Tendai's teaching, translation bias, that the Lotus Sutra is supreme and began advocating, quote, all the living beings are born with one of the five mutually distinctive natures. As the Buddha preached, to guide them according to their characters, it was correct that he used the three vehicle or three kinds of teaching. The one vehicle teaching was merely expedient, though the revealing the profound and the secret sutra was transmitted from India. It was not a teaching of Buddhism, but more like a non-Buddhist teaching that was carried to China. Exactly what I was explaining earlier. As they claimed that the Lotus Sutra was expedient and that the revealing the profound and secret sutra was true, really just new, the verification by Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha of many treasures, and the Buddhas in manifestation from all the worlds in the universe were reduced to vacuous words, leaving Xuanzang and Zuan to be worshipped as living Buddhas. Ugh. So that's a short story that Nichiren gives to turn upside down this political theater and egomaniacal desire to rule, how it destroys the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. And by extension, all of those who would practice, annihilating their potential for enlightenment, Buddhahood. And now they're stretching their legs and doing all, and great, but it's not, now they're firmly stuck in a samsara. We just love to possess things, own them, right? So that's our common ground. But how devastating to walk away from such an enlightened, amazing state of being in favor of just doing like everyone says, you know. It's preposterous, but this is what human beings do all over and over again. Because, as I said, it takes effort and courage to believe in one's Buddha, one's self. Self not as a human, but as a apparatus that emerges this amazing perceptive experiential tool called the mind. We can all forage around like animals and find things to eat and exist as animals on this planet. Yeah, that's what we've manifested from. But our potential is so much greater. Moving on. The wrong doctrine of the Qigong school. Now Nichiren's going to say, okay, this is what happened. This is how they got polluted. Now let's talk about the Qigong school. During the reign of Empress Wu, a new version of the Flower Garland Sutra was introduced. A new version? Who wrote it? Why is it new? How is it different? There's only one Flower Garland Sutra, right? The Avatamsaka Sutra, the one that Shakyamuni taught in the first few weeks of his enlightenment, although nobody understood him, which is why he backed off and started systematically teaching to the capacity of the people until he could get back to teaching his own enlightenment, which is the Lotus Sutra. In order to remove the sting from the criticism by Grandmaster Tendai, Priest Fatsang established the Qigong school based on the old Flower Garland Sutra and supplemented by the newly translated one. This school insisted that the Flower Garland Sutra was fundamental and the Lotus Sutra was unessential. The Northern and Southern Masters placed the Flower Garland Sutra first, the Nirvana second. Interesting, the first teachings of Shakyamuni for a couple of weeks, they placed as probably because of the history and the order of teachings, ironically. And the Nirvana Sutra, those words of Shakyamuni on his deathbed, waiting to expire, to encourage all of his followers, just because I'm not here doesn't mean you can't continue the practice of the Lotus Sutra. And the Lotus Sutra third. So they still respected it enough to put it in the top three, but they demoted it from the first and last. Interesting chronology, yeah? Grandmaster Tendai placed the Lotus Sutra first, the Nirvana second, and the Flower Garland third. So the Flower Garland still very well respected in Tendai Buddhism, yeah? While this Qigong school placed the Flower Garlands first, the Lotus Sutra second, and the Nirvana Sutra third. Interesting. So he just shifted the value of these various teachings just so he could claim Qigong. That's what we practice. That's the way to Buddhism or to Buddha. So that's the Qigong school. Just reordering things and really getting that incorrect. Tendai was very, very well respected throughout all of China. Defeated in debate all the northern and southern schools because he made it obvious Lotus Sutra, in its own words, is the primary teachings, the goal of Buddhism. So they all put down their opinions and said, we're all following Tendai. He's obviously right. But along comes this other guy who he wants to be strutting his stuff. So he just changes the order of things. Just arbitrarily. The wrong doctrine of the Shingon school. Oof. We've already talked about the Shingon school. This is, they're a real mess. They're like organized crime. They found a patsy. They found a way to discredit what was obviously the correct teaching and usurped with made-up words, marketing the position of the Lotus Sutra by stripping it of its essential statements and applying those to other sutras to demote the Lotus Sutra, demonizing it sort of, or devaluing it anyway. They knew explicitly what they were doing. It's the most explicit story I've read about a different sect commandeering the followers of the Lotus Sutra in a very obvious way. And we read that before, so look that up. The wrong doctrine of the Shingon school. Later, during the reign of Emperor Shutsung, Tripitaka master Subhakarashima brought the Great Sun Buddha Sutra and the Sutra on the Act of Perfection from India, and Tripitaka Master Vajrabodhi brought in the Diamond Peak Sutra. Among the disciples of Vajrabodhi was Tripitaka Master Amoghavaja. These three masters were Indians of noble blood, so they were used to being well-respected, right? And were different from the Chinese in personality, of course. Whole different culture, right? In addition, their doctrine included mudra, symbolic finger signs, right? All of those things. And mantras that were magical words, mystic words for spells, right? Dharani. New practices that had never been heard of since the introduction of Buddhism during the later Han period. So we love foreigners. They're exciting. They're different. So there's a fetish about new stuff, right? Somehow the three masters looked so solemn and magnificent that even the emperor bowed in front of them, and all his subjects paid homage to them, of course. Holding their hands together in respect, these masters began to preach. And this is a quotation from what they were preaching. The comparative superiority of the Flower Garland Sutra, the Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra, the Wisdom Sutra, the Nirvana Sutra, and the Lotus Sutra is nothing more than exoteric. This is outside opinions, not the core. Really? Oh, wow. What are they going to tell us? The teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, while the Great Sun Buddha Sutra is esoteric. It's very refined. It's very, very important. Teaching of the Great Sun Buddha, King of the Dharma. Oh, okay. So the guy who became completely enlightened in his Buddha nature, who started this entire teaching and lived 50 years of his life teaching these doctrines. More than 50 years, right? 42 plus 8, yeah, 50 years. His teaching life, he lived till he was 80. Shakyamuni. Oh, one of the stories he told as an expedient means to people of a certain capacity about Amida. Oh, that's the real Buddha. That's the one to follow. One of Shakyamuni's stories supersedes Shakyamuni. It's more important. That's some twisted logic there, don't you think? Those various sutras can be compared to 10,000 words of the common people, while this great Buddha, Sun Buddha Sutra is like one word of the emperor. Ah, now we get to the gist of it. Authoritarianism again, right? Be afraid. This is the real. The Flower Garland Sutra and the Nirvana Sutras cannot be compared with the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, even with the help of a ladder. Okay, I guess superiority is well established as being above. Only the Lotus Sutra shares similarities with the Great Sun Buddha Sutras. Ah, there it is, the usurping of the clarity and the essential teachings of the Lotus Sutra. Yeah, you're not wrong to have been practicing the Lotus Sutra, but that's just like a flashlight in the attic. Let me show you what the attic really looks like. Let me turn the real light on, this imaginary Buddha. Unbelievable. Only the Lotus Sutra shares similarities with the Great Sun Buddha Sutra. However, the Lotus Sutra is the one preached by Shakyamuni Buddha. Yeah. It resembles the true words of the common people. While the Great Sun Buddha Sutra is like the true words of the emperor. So he's using, if you remember, he's using Shakyamuni Buddha's, Siddhartha Gautama's device of using the language of the common people, Prakrit, trying to stay un-elite, and he's from an elite clan, to make sure that his teaching is universal and reaches everyone. You don't have to be a certain class or a Brahmin to understand this is a universal truth. So it's not just for the elite. But these teachers of the Shingon flip that on its head. And they say because Shakyamuni came from ordinary people, that, you know, what he talks of isn't as important as what comes out of the mouth of the emperor, superior being. It's exactly what Shakyamuni was railing against. And they flipped it on its head. Become subservient. Be afraid. The words are similar, but the value of the speaker is quite different. There it is, explicit. It is like the reflection of the moon in dirty water and clean water. Ugh, this is so insulting to the founder of Buddhism. The shape of the moon reflected looks the same, but the purity of the water is quite different. Nichiren closes this part, and this will be the end of this video today. Nobody opposed this. How is that possible? Just fear, right? Nobody opposed this. And the various Buddhist schools surrendered to the Shingon school. How is that possible? Do you see why it's important to stand on principle? I don't mean go to war. I don't mean be violent or arrogant. I'm saying if you know something to be true, then how profound is your knowing if you're just willing to cast it aside for something else? Says a lot about your practice, doesn't it? So how could this be allowed to happen? Oh, the only thing I can think of is fear, right? In a time of a lot of violence, people succumb to their fears. After the death of Subhakarashima and Vajrabodhi, Tripitaka master Amoghavajra returned to India and brought back the treatise on aspiration for enlightenment, making the Shingon school all the more prosperous in China. So now he's backed off all the way from self-manifesting Buddha, Lotus Sutra practice, all the way back to a teaching that says, here's how to wish you could be enlightened. Oh yeah, that's who I am. That's all I can do. That's atrocious. And it's no wonder why people like that Nichiren calls enemies of the Buddha, because they're derailing your own self-enlightenment. They're promoting the fact that you'll never get there, but let's teach you how to want to get there. That's enough for you. It's horrible. So now the next step is a return to ownership of Buddhahood. And the next chapter is restoration of the Tendai school by Grandmaster Myalo. And then the introduction of Buddhism to Japan, the spread of the Dharma by Grandmaster Dengyo. So now we're going to start seeing this shift back toward the essential teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. But we'll start that in the next video, because I don't want to, I'm trying to keep these under an hour. I know you got a lot to do in a busy life. Nothing stops you from watching these one after another. But, you know, give yourself a rest. Give yourself time to chant and integrate your insights. And I'm trying to do these every day, but you don't have to study this every day. You can stay on one and chew on it for a while. All I care about your practice is that you are serious about it and you stick with it. Because in our age, that's the most difficult thing to do. Your insights will come, I guarantee you. I know this from decades of practice. I know we have weak moments, but you can always chant. How easy is that? Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. So be kind to yourself. Please take care of your health. I appreciate you more deeply than I can express. Your practice is invaluable. It's changing the world. Please know that. And the more that we stick together, let's use the algorithms of YouTube. Subscribe. You don't have to watch every video. Just subscribe to this Sangha, because the YouTube algorithms will make sure that others are more likely to run into this, and give them an opportunity. It's Bodhisattva work. How can there be any harm in that? Right? Let me know in the comments what you're thinking, how your practice is going. Right? Let me know. I want to know. I want to know because from your comments, your emails, I derive needs in the Sangha. And therefore, I will step out of the Gosho and I will find information to answer non sequiturs, stuff that aren't in those. This channel's full of videos on, you know, what is Namu Myōren Gekyo? How do I do this? How do I fix me? Those aren't from Gosho. Those are from my study and my insights. And I want to share them with you. I just want to know what it is you're curious about so I can address your concerns. I want to help you practice well or deeply or feel inspired, right? But I'm not a mind reader. So give me a clue. And in the meantime, as I said, be kind to yourself and keep your practice strong. If you can, help to support this channel. You're doing so by subscribing, but you know, there are unfortunately financial imperatives, keeping the internet connection, making these videos, so on and so forth. So if you can support in that manner, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/TLK, or you can go to PayPal directly, to paypal.me/SifuSylvain. If you can, it's not a duress, it's not a demand, it's not a requirement, but it's deeply, deeply appreciated, not just by me, but all of us, right? Because it makes this channel possible. So I appreciate that. And in the meantime, Namu Myōren Gekyo. I will look forward to seeing you participate in the next video. Should be a little bit more encouraging. And bye for now.